I haven't met Joseph Smith, but he is one individual that he's on my top. He's like my top that I can't wait to meet.
I do feel like the church has done their due diligence in making amends for the things that they've done in the past. They have shown that, hey, we're making amends, and we're making amends for things that we didn't cause, that we were not a part of, but things that we either subconsciously or inadvertently benefited from, right?
Honestly, my convergence is more than skin deep. Think about those people who joined the church back in the 60s and 50s, regardless of outwardly racism, knowing that they could not be a part of anything, people saying all these things about them, but they still stayed there.
Spiritual monsters.
Yeah. And there's a place here waiting for you. For your business,
yeah, we're on the Lord's time, sharing his love and his life. Welcome to Brothers in the Foyer, a podcast where we create a space for unity, understanding, and inspiration. Join us as we share stories of faith, representation, and transformative in our lives. We love diving into topics that uplift and strengthen faith. I'm here with my brothers, Will, Andrew, Mo, and we have a very, very special guest with us today. We're joined by our brother, Bachelor Johnson, and I'm your host, Isaiah. In this episode, we're talking about a controversial topics from garments, apologizing for racism, and information about Joseph Smith that has some blurred lines in there. Before we get started, we want to give a huge shout out to our partners, Serve Clothing.
Hey.
Be sure to check out their incredible gear and use our promo code FOYERFAM for any discounts off of their premium wear. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started.
Let's do it.
Well, first and foremost, Bachelor, thanks for joining us today, man. We greatly appreciate you for taking the time to come out and join us.
Yeah, man.
And we do, before we just jump straight in, we do want to give our audience some background about you. So if you don't mind just kind of introducing yourself to our audience, some things that you would like them to know about yourself. I mean, because you've been highly influential, you know, in this space of bringing the gospel to other people. So, yeah, we like to just give our audience a more better taste of Bachelor.
So first of all, love what you guys are doing. I'm honored to be here. We met not too long ago, actually. I have different history, different brothers in here. But as for me, I just consider myself just a content creator. Not really anything crazy. I started my content creating journey as most people do, just posting kind of whatever online. And my platform has continued to kind of do the same thing. I think I've matured up a little bit and probably, you know, filtered out some of the stuff I used to do as a young bull. But in terms of the faith, it was just always very open about the faith. Felt that I had a responsibility to post about it if I was still going to post everything else in my life. Mm-hmm. It made no sense for me to, you know, hide the main portion of my life that contributed the most. And it kind of led me to where I am now. And in terms of my background, I was born in California, but I was raised in Houston, Texas, West Houston, Katy, Texas. Came out to Utah when I was 17 after I graduated high school. Was an academic kid. Walked on to BYU and University of Utah to play football. If you're out in Utah, I worked at Fat Cats. That was my spot. Yeah, dude, I was shift lead and DJ. That was my top. And then most importantly, recently got married, and mm-hmm. Also, yeah, I'm expecting the kids, so in 9 months from now.
What?
Oh, hey, God, bro.
Hey,
bro.
Hey, for real.
Yeah, man. No, you know the family that's not LDS, they're like, you didn't waste no time. I was like, hey, man, the people in Utah, I'm late to the party. So it depends on perspective. But yeah, bro, I forgot
that's
to tell
awesome,
you. I was like,
bro,
yeah, casually just sneaking that in there. But I'm super hyped to be here and excited to dive in and the topics we're going to talk about. So, yeah.
Bro, awesome. We got to have you on for another one, man. There's some more stuff we got. Ooh, yeah. Fatherhood.
Yeah, man. Fatherhood. Yeah. Man.
I know. We just need to have an episode where I just sit here and then y'all just drill. I just take out the bag. And you guys just drill me with stuff on a whiteboard. That'd be hilarious. What not to do. What not to
bro,
say.
Bro, I'm telling you, man.
Bro, we're still learning that.
Right. We still in training, bro.
Still got the training.
Bro, because I knew something was up, bro, when she started. She, like, my wife, like, she not like a picky eater, but she'll like eat sparingly. And then, bro, she was throwing down. I'm sitting over here just like, God, like, you starving or what? Like, I'm not taking care of you. Like, let me know. And then, bro, she's very emotional. I'm sitting over here. She's like, I'm like, you know, like, the way I was raised, like, you know, tough enough. Like, hey, man, what you crying for? Like, come on now. You just watching Harry Potter. Like, what are you talking about? And then, after our rec league game, I'm just sitting. Bro, we just got whooped in our rec league game. We had one of the dudes on the rec league team that had, like, one arm. And I'm like, we just getting whooped, bro. So I come home. Man. I'm just sitting down like, dang, is this what I've came to, man? Like, when people ask me, you can't whoop. And I'm sitting over there. She's like, she knows how I take losses super hard. So she's like, hey, can I tell you something? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, we're going to have a baby. I'm just like, oh, wait, what? Run that back. Hold on, let me get it back up. And then I'm like, it makes sense. But I didn't know if I was allowed to say that. Because of like, you know, all the stuff she was doing. And I was like, man. And she's like, look at her baby. That. It's like a little seed. And I'm sitting over here like, how can that little seed have that much effect on you? But now I know. We doing pregnancy walks. I'm doing, like, I'm making sure. I'm like, do not touch that laundry. I'm taking care of it. Like,
there it is, man.
Got to figure out how to cook. I'm like, oh, Lord. I got to learn. But anyways, yeah.
So it's been fun.
Bro, that is awesome, man.
Yeah, man.
My wife's pregnant as well. It's the smells. Like, I don't know if your wife is there yet, but like, she's like, everything that you could think that doesn't smell, she'll smell it. Straight up bloodhound. Like, I could,
bro.
I could, like, you know,
like food aversions and all that.
Yeah. I like one time aversion. I like made some food real quick. Just like, she's real touchy with meat. And I like, cooked up some meat real quick just for lunch when she was gone. Cause I work from home. An hour later, she comes back. She's like, you cooked meat, didn't you? I was like, oh my gosh. She's going to tear me up.
Dude, I have stories of women who don't like the smell of their husbands.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just serious. Like, they don't like the body odor. It's not even if they stink. It's just them. And so they can't even sleep in the same bed, bro.
Oh, what? I have a buddy. His wife won't kiss him. Because she can't, it's the exact thing. She doesn't like to smell him. So she, like, for 9 months, straight up doesn't kiss her husband. I'm like, how are you guys? That, they've had three they have three kids. I'm like, how did you do it the first time?
Yeah, bro, there's levels to this, man. It's the first trimester, second, and there's all kinds of stuff that goes
into it. Just woke with a new furious.
Right.
It's a whole nother ball game, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. We digress, but we back.
We back.
Most definitely got to bring it in. So one area of discussion we're going to be discussing today is the issue of garments, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that are members of the church or wasn't members of the church where they feel like there are some things within our faith or that the church needs to change in order for members to stay, right? And there's ex-Mormons out there that are bringing these areas up to the forefront. So we want to deep dive a little bit and discuss those and bring the light that we have on these areas to help people understand why these things are important and why the church moves the way they do in order to help people draw nearer to Christ. Yeah. So from your experience, Bachelor, like, what have you seen? Because I know you get a lot of people that were rather be in your DMs and your comments discussing these issues and why they have issues with it in terms of like garments. So like, what are you seeing out there with it?
The more I've gone off, I realize everything's just a matter of perspective, right? Things are going to seem weird to people who are not accustomed to certain cultures. And I guess like the biggest growth that I made internally is just understanding that there is the principle, right? There's the doctrine, and then how we practice that is going to be cultural. Mm-hmm. And people get caught up in trying to understand that. But like the easiest way that I can put it is if you were to say, you know, Jesus Christ commandment, love thy neighbor. Throughout generations, we'll realize that love kind of like love evolves. Love looks different, right? Like practicing that and how you practice your faith is going to look different. My grandparents, their form of love and discipline was, you know, like pretty harsh spankings, pretty harsh spankings. I remember my mom would tell me that it was required for her to like know what mango was like ripe and wasn't wasn't ripe. So she would grow up, like climb up the tree. If she grabbed the wrong mango, like you weren't allowed to move, her father would throw it back at her if it was the wrong mango. Like that was the way of like teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. For us, that's going to be kind of crazy, right? And like for us, we're going to evolve in a way where we don't have to teach that way. But at that time, they did what they thought was best. And in practicing the gospel, I've kind of realized to give grace to those first implementing the temple ordinances, or to give grace to those trying to understand how to navigate themselves culturally. I know we're going to deep dive into racism. Like, it's kind of arrogant of us to assume that those people at that time were going to be perfect and know exactly how we would operate now. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because our grandkids and our great grandkids, if they're looking back at our lives with the same microscope that we see people looking back at their lives, I'm going to be embarrassed because there are things that I know I'm going to screw up in the future that I am going to have to make sure that it doesn't pass along. And I just, and when we talk about these topics, it's just kind of like I don't really know what they expect from us. I think we're navigating the best that we can and then making change as we can, but then also trying to understand why we do what we do and in practicing that. So I feel like it's super complex. And on social media, y'all see it, like people want this 90-second reel about like why we do what we do, and mm-hmm. and they want that quick answer. And I'm just like, dude, this isn't
how is
that fair for us to be able to navigate, like to be able to provide that for you, because we're still learning in our way. Like the main thing that we all agree on is like, hey, we want to live the best that we can for ourselves, for our family, in a way that emulates Jesus Christ. Everything outside of that, we're all still like trying to figure out how to best do that. So,
yeah, I mean, from what I see, too, like that's out there in terms of people addressing garments, whether it be members or ex-members that have had issues with it. Like, do we even really understand the importance of it? Like, are people really grasping the concept behind why we wear garments? Like, can we speak on that a little bit? Because personally, what I'm seeing is, they're talking about it, whether it be they're uncomfortable or they just don't, you know, like wear them for whatever reason. But could that change the mindset of an individual on garments if they really understood the significance behind them?
Yeah, I feel like garments are in like two different categories. People put it in like the culture side of things and then convenience.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, this is what everyone else is doing. Everyone's going to the temple. Everyone's getting their endowments taken in, but they don't really know why they're doing it. It's just expected. And they agree to these covenants and things that they don't fully understand. And then when it's time to wear these garments, showing your inward relationship with Christ outwardly, they don't see the why they should do it. And it just turns into this problem of, why are we even wearing them? What's the whole reason? And just the why behind it is lost. And I feel like we just continue to deal with this process because people don't fully understand what it represents and why we have it, you know? And so I think if people truly understood the why behind it, they would actually be more converted to it and understand why it's important.
I do think us in the church, we do get an unfair rap sometimes just because we don't see anybody else. We don't see any other religions.
Christian religions.
Yeah. Christian religions, like we don't see them, like we don't see those religions like getting attacked. Like they're not held under the same pedigree. If we talk about church history, it's like, dude, are you going to sit here and tell me that you know that your religion like stemmed from the Christian crusades where people were murdering people under the name of God? Are we going to talk about that? But you want to talk about like how many wives Joseph Smith had? I'm like, okay, you guys want to talk about like the church doesn't, like they're making so much money. It's like, dude, do you know that your pastor is making the killing off of you guys and is not passing that money back to the members? It's like, are we going to do, yeah. That's why, like the most mega
private jets,
in the hood, like you got like, not even trying, hey,
when you go to
we're not going
to
make it about, we ain't going to make it about race, but they got these white pastors like that take advantage of these black communities and they go there and they preach the gospel and they riding out in BMWs and they go out and need these black members in these areas they don't drive out in good whips. And I've like, the reason why I know that, because I was in Houston, I would see it and I would go to those congregations and I'd be like, this doesn't, something's not adding up.
You can see right through it.
You can see right through it. But with the garments, it's like, you're right. It's like, how do we, I do think one thing that could potentially change is maybe should we have a more standard way of teaching temple prep? Because I know in my temple prep class, I had a great temple prep teacher. I switched wards to finish out and I didn't necessarily have the best temple prep experience. So I had to read I read certain books to prepare me for my endowment. Mm-hmm. Should that be up to the member's responsibility to get those books, or should it be the church's responsibility to provide a standard temple prep class that might be more, I don't know.
I mean, that's a good point, but I feel like the church is starting to now kind of become more of a space where you need to be able to be upon yourself, yeah. take upon mm-hmm. yourself spiritually to increase your understanding. You know, I feel like a lot of people are expecting to be spoon-fed, and the church is like, nah, yeah. you need to do it in your own home, and then we're just here to support you, you know? And I think that's what's important, is that if you're trying to increase your spirituality or increase your covenants with Heavenly Father, you need to be able to yourself be able to take that upon you and say, all right, I want to learn and add more understanding to myself. But people just don't do that, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I feel like, kind of like what you're saying, like we need to have more education around it, need to learn more about it. But I feel like in the church, we kind of like to keep it almost like secret, and nobody, like people talk about it, but like the church doesn't talk about it much.
They, and that is crazy, because they just released within the past couple of years about pictures inside the temple and mm-hmm. covenants that we make inside the temple and being more open about it.
Yeah.
And what do you guys think is like, because I always wonder like what sparked them to want to do this? Was it like a realization like, hey, like we can talk about these things? Because there are certain things in the temple that we do not talk about, and we make covenants have to talk about, and those things are sacred. Everything outside of that, we are open and honest about it. And they even have pictures of the temple clothes that are available mm-hmm. that for people yeah. to see. So do you think it's just, I don't know, like what sparks these changes you guys think in the gospel? Is it just like I have a theory, but like, do you guys think it's the members getting to a point where we're just like, hey, like this is what we're more comfortable with? Because I know if we were to tell our, you know, our grandparents' generation or like older members, they'd be like, yeah.
For real.
What you doing? Keep it secret. Keep it safe. I think at least my theory on it is I feel like because there is so much negative things that are out there. I mean, I've seen, you know, don't go look this up, but I've seen videos of the whole temple session. Yes. You know, those live on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, and again, don't look it up, but like people are trashing the church and the things that we hold sacred. And so I think, at least my theory is, the church is trying to combat that mm-hmm. and the only way that you can combat that is by coming out with clear information and telling people not everything, but what to expect.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I see it two ways. I mean, because this is it's a spiritual work, and the Lord has always revealed things grace by grace, right? And according to people willing to receive it. And so we could just be moving into an era where there are more people that are open and receptive to things that once were not talked about as much. And now that information is just getting out more openly by the church. And then I see it as like the body, the church being the body, right? There's the head, there's hands, there's the feet, right? Everybody kind of has their responsibility in bringing information and knowledge to the world. And that there is things that years ago you could go find out, but it just wasn't openly talked about by general leaders of the church. But yeah. the information was there if you went out and searched it in as an individual.
Right.
And so it's about sources and delegations. Like we can say we're an appendage to getting that information out, right? Because there's things that we've talked about on our show about the history of the church and race that a lot of people just didn't know is there. And the church general authorities aren't talking about it, but they have people like us to support that can get that information out. So I feel like it's a combination of two. Like the head, they're now being more open, getting information out because there's more people that would want to know and are being receptive. But then there's also the hands and the feet of the church that have a role in bringing that information to light as well.
Yeah. Just to add to that, I think people's
either member or non-member, the lack of understanding about different things that go on, especially with the garment. You know, I feel like when you don't understand the historical context, you know, going all the way back to Adam and Eve and God giving them the garment, I think people don't read the Bible and don't understand, you know, the importance of it and what it symbolizes. And so because of that, that's why we have these videos where people are just saying whatever and trashing what we're doing. And I think what could help that is increasing their faith, being in a way where you're receptive, you're open to learning and doing your due diligence to figure out why you're doing it, you know, and not being acted upon, but acting. So,
and another point you're saying about how the garments and the temple, it's always been around, but just no one ever took the time to actually read the scriptures. It's been in the scriptures from for eons.
Yeah.
It's just that we don't study it. We don't take it upon ourselves to do it. But another thing is, I feel that the temple, the endowment, it's the gospel of Jesus Christ, you know, and that's something that we're supposed to share. And if we're not sharing it, how are people going to know about it? Mm-hmm. So I feel like the churches naturally want these things to be told because it's really not a secret. These are things the whole world needs to adapt.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know,
learn about
secret
the law of sacrifice.
Either.
That's important.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing is secret. It's sacred.
It's sacred. Yeah. And that's a huge, you know? And I love that. That's a huge difference because the connotation of secret is just like, we're like hiding something. But like sacred is just like, yeah, there's a certain time and place that you discuss certain things. But even with what you said about just like going back to Adam and Eve, it's before I went through the temple, if you read the scriptural text about the temple process, you wouldn't be shocked by anything we do in there. Like it talks about like Abram did become Abraham. Like what does that signify? Like what does it signify when, you know, you and your wife take upon the same last name, right? Like what does it signify for me to wear this ring? Like I could technically, like I don't have to wear this ring and I'm still married, but this ring does have symbolism to it. And it means something to my wife, especially for me to wear it. Cause I know I'm not really big on like wearing anything on my hands. I've always been, and that was one of the things she was like, hey, it would mean a lot to me if you wore it. And I'm like, why? Right. And then we talk about, hey, what does it mean to her? Like going out in public for people to see, like I'm out and about all the time. Like it's a symbol of a commitment.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. And that's what it means to us. And there has to be certain, cause my friend asked me, he's like, hey, why do you need religion? I'm like, God is a God of order. And I think people forget that. It's like, yeah, you have the freedom to do whatever you want, but God is a God of order. There are certain things that are placed in order for us, to do what we need to do to show our commitment. Like I can just, like you can say that you love God or you can show that you love God. And there are ways that you can show that you love God. And this is one of the many ways. So
I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because a lot of people say, oh, you know, you don't need any works, but like showing that you love God, like people would consider that works, but it's really not, you know? So I like that. I'm going to write that down.
Thing with your wife, spouse. I mean, you could tell her how much you love her, but if you ain't showing it,
I guess it's pretty hollow.
You know, it takes work. It takes effort.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like to sum it up, you know, Andrew, you made the expression that the garment, you know, it's our outward expression of our inner commitment to follow Christ, you know, and other faiths have their thing of how they do that. You know, we have the hijabs for Islam. We have, and I don't want to get this wrong, I'm so sorry, but the Indian, they wear the, what's the dot that they put on their,
oh, yeah,
their forehead? Other faiths, they have their ways of showing how they how they follow God in their faith, and the garment is how we do ours. And so why do people feel like this is a change that's needed? Like, is it the change of just talking about it or just having the garment involved altogether?
And this is what gets me. It's because even if you fix their temporal needs, or even if you fix their, like, I don't even know how to explain it, you can't change, you, like, I would rather the heart change the mind than the mind change the heart, right? Because I don't see it, I can't argue my way or convince you through these other things. It's like I want to encourage you in your faith of Jesus Christ and then let you come to that understanding yourself. Because people are going to talk about comfortability, convenience, right? Mm-hmm. But if we fix comfortability or convenience, they still won't wear it. Like, that's, yeah. That's the reality. It's like,
right. Which they're doing. They're creating so many different yes. styles of garments.
And so that's something that makes sense to me. But what doesn't make sense to me is when we're arguing with people that are not in our faith or having a deep discussion with them. And we provide them the source, provide them the proof. And they're like, yeah. Well, what about this? And then the goalpost moves. I'm just like, you know what? Yeah. You didn't really care to know. Like that was, you didn't really care to understand the garment. You just don't like the faith. And it's fine. Let's just be honest. Let's just be clear cut. Let's just tell me, let me know what I'm dealing with. If you do not like my faith, great. Let's just go about our day. Brother Bill is still to do tomorrow. Okay. So it's like, but with the changes, I see that as a church understanding, like, and I say the church, I just want to make this clear. We are not separate from the church. Like Sister Alberto put it plainly that the church are the members. So when we say the church, it is an extension. Like we are a part of that. We play a small piece in it, but it is a global religion. So with that being said, the church expanding to places like Africa, like in those, all those countries involved, there's no way that they can justify wearing some of these garment pieces that we have in their climate at all. And I do think that, like for me, I personally, when I first got endowed, I was cool wearing my garments underneath my workout clothes because I just wanted to be so close to the Savior. But then it got to a point where it's like, all right, this is not practical at all. I will say I'm the type of person, if I'm going to work out or something, I do wear the bottoms all the time. I don't know if you're allowed to do it. Sometimes I'll show up late to sacrament. I take the water, like even if I didn't take the bread. Like I just want to be as close as I can. I don't know how it works. I don't know if it's like
spirit alive.
I don't know how it works, but it's like I want as much as I can. And so when they are showing like towards the last quarter of 2025 in America, they're gonna release the sleeveless.
It's like sleeveless, yeah.
Yeah.
So
tank top boys.
Are people going to use that an excuse to wear tanks all the time?
Yeah. No, the excuse is going to be, oh, now they're changing things. Like, we can't change things.
Yeah, it's like that's the whole point.
It still means the same thing.
It means the same thing.
Bro, we used to wear them to our wrists and ankles, but now
I heard it.
But like, now it's not. I know, bro.
One onesie?
Bro.
Yeah, those in the spiritual
onesies, man.
For me, though, it kind of made sense for them because they were in Utah. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, when you expand out, it's like, yo, like we kind of, you know,
it's honestly just a witness of God's love for everybody. He adapts and helps his children be able to keep their covenants. But he's like, okay, I understand that there's things that are going on or this, the climate here, or it's a different culture or whatever. And he tries to help us so we can be able to ultimately keep our covenants. Cause that's what's most important. You know?
But you guys said it, it already happened in the scriptures. Mm-hmm. Like the reason why God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, and the reason why there was even the law of Moses was because there were more brutal stuff going on at the time. Like an eye for an eye was merciful compared to what they were what they were doing back then.
And you steal something, you die.
Yeah, you die. Yeah. Like you just immediately, it's just death. It was the death penalty for everything. And then when you came back, you said, you know what, you know, like if you steal something, we'll cut off your hand. You know, we'll do that instead of killing you. Like it sounds like a good alternative. Yeah. But then for us, it's just like, whoa, like why do they have, like you don't need to cut off somebody's hand, you know, just we have some other fines, that some of the change of currency. But like that's how it happens throughout time. So when people see all these changes, they're like, oh, like we caught you guys. Like, no, you didn't, dude. Like, what do you guys want us to do? You guys want us to not evolve? Really? It's like they want to put us in the box of like Mormons, like Amish people. No disrespect with Amish people. Shout out to Amish people if y'all watch this. Like, respect to y'all, but we're not Amish, right? And so, like, they said, like, they want to put us in the box of Amish.
They probably won't watch this stuff.
I know my fault. You never know. They might be progressing too. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how it works.
True.
But it's just like, they want to put us in this box of, like, you guys are like this. And then when we progress, it's just like, oh, wait, what? Like, you can't have it. Like, yes, you can. Yeah. Like, the gospel of Jesus Christ is progressing because that is essentially what the gospel of Jesus Christ was. That's the reason why they killed Jesus Christ, was because he was a progressive mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so, don't even get me started on that. But
you can't hang out with the sinners.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Bro.
I feel, and speaking of that, just that within that time period, I feel like members of the church and even people outside of the church becoming like this Pharisees-like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting so point, you can't do this, you can't do that. But I feel like we need to understand there's a balance. But obviously there's things the Lord has set and bounds he set. But I feel like sometimes we kind of miss the mark. You know, I just, as members of the church today. And so I feel like
stumbling block.
Just stumbling block.
People focus on it and allow, like, oh, they're changing it, so yeah. I'm gone. Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah,
kind of ridiculous.
I always wonder, like, how many members left after the they reversed the ban. I always think about, like, how many members leave after the many members are going to leave after these changes. How many members are going to lose their faith because the church is releasing sleeveless garments? I was like, when were sleeves ever a part of our testimony? I never thought to myself. But I don't know how. I don't know. Hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. No, let's go there. We can have a smooth transition because both of y'all just brought up something stumbling block. How many people left because of, you know, the ban being lifted, right? Because that's another area that has been a major topic is racism, you know, in the church. And people feeling like the church needs to apologize for racism. So let's touch on that. Like, what is it with people getting so hung up on the racism in the church when racism has been around in some form or fashion for a long time.
And you guys gotta let me know if y'all disagree with this. I don't want anybody, I don't want any leader to come and apologize. I don't want them. I don't want any apology. The best apology is change behavior. In America, do not come to me and tell me, hey, we're sorry about slavery. How about you just give reparations the same way you did for every culture? How about you do policy change that will actually help black people out? No, I'm gonna give y'all an example. America wants to apologize for slavery, so they give affirmative action. Who is affirmative action to? That is for any person that is a minority in a sense. No, that is not a reparation. Reparation is specifically towards the group that has been harmed. So never in the history of America has there been specific policy making that was nationwide that was guaranteed towards black people. There was no apology. Okay. And in the church, I do feel like the church has done their due diligence in making amends for the things that they've done in the past. I have seen the church has gone to places that have been victims of redlining, and they've provided financial like self-reliance classes that are specific
NCAAP.
They're specifically geared towards the black community. They've teamed up with NAACP. They have done things that have not just said, hey, I'm sorry, but they've shown they have shown that, hey, we're making amends, and we're making amends for things that we didn't cause, that we were not a part of, but things that we either subconsciously or inadvertently benefited from, right? And I hate when they try to make it seem like, you know, like the priesthood ban, and I talked about this in one of my other videos. The reason why it gets me upset is not necessarily the ban on the priesthood itself. It's just the fact that we were kept from those temple blessings. It's like my grandparent couldn't like gotten sealed to his family forever. And I think that's because we miss so, like you talked about, we miss so many different marks that we don't even know how to talk about it. And then I had this one. I'm just venting to you guys at this point. I had this one brother that he's from Africa, and he came. I think he's like a international student. He came and he was just like talking about how like racism isn't real. And I had to pull him aside after church. I had to be like, dude, listen, brother. I just want you to understand this. Where are your ancestors from? Like, where are your ancestors from? He told me the country he's from. I said, I cannot tell you that. The reason why I cannot tell you that is because those documents were stripped from my family when we came out here. So our experience with being black, different, brother. Like, we may have the same complexion, completely different.
It's different.
Black American is totally different than where we came from. Because like there's so many ethnicities that you guys recognize in Africa. Mm. We don't have the luxury of experiencing that. A person from New York is completely categorized in the same category with someone, a black person from Kansas. And so like there's like these little nuances. Like, oh dude, I'm telling you, there's probably like there's gonna be a bunch of white people that are gonna watch this and think that we all like, dang, they probably love the same things, they love the same music, love the same foods.
No, I'm like, no,
for real. No,
I listen to country. Yeah. I don't care.
I hate country. It's the worst music ever.
Hey man, hey, I listen to it all. But you see,
I'm all over the place too.
Smooth jazz, I don't even care.
Oh, dude, my dad's on this Frank Sinatra era. I'm like,
whoa.
I'm like, dad, is it? Never mind, no comment. The 90s was 90s dead and 2024 dead, a little different. But no, I think it's like, what do you guys think about that? I'm not saying that I don't think the church should come out and not apologize, but I think what they have done, I think, has been the staple of what you should do.
Absolutely.
As an organization. And I do think, like, how they are, I think America should follow suit. And I also think those people that are calling out racism in the church, I want to see what you were doing during the Black Lives Matter movement. I want to see, I want to see how big of an advocate were you really? I want to see how you felt in your own community. Cause if you haven't done any work in your own community, then don't go on social media and talk about it. That's how I feel.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Like the church can say this and that, you know, and they have said it, President Russell M. Nelson have talked about rooting out racism. You got Dallin H. Oaks. All these guys have talked about it. But I think it comes down to us as the members implementing it and actually living the first and second commandment. You know, if we're actually brothers and sisters, we need to act like that amongst ourselves in the wards. And then I think as we do that, people will see, oh, the church is not racist. Like, man, like that, it'll nip itself in the bud. Like if we do that, like
I really like what you said that first part. Cause like you guys remember when there was that fake apology letter
and went around
from the church that went around
like
and
2017, 2018, something like that.
Something like that. And there is like this, there was one person specifically, I'm not going to call them out.
I know exactly.
But she was like in tears that this was fake. And I'm like, I was like, I don't really see the point, you know, what, like if you are waiting so long to get an apology from the church when they've already corrected their actions, which one holds more weight? You know, if somebody, like if I was stolen from and someone said, oh, I'm sorry, but they didn't return the gift, you know, which one holds more value?
Get my AirPods back, bro.
Get my PS5 back, bro. Like it doesn't make as big of a deal for me. Like words can be empty. Like if it came from the church, it could be an email. I don't know who that came from.
Restitution.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Restitution. And that's what the church did. And I think that holds way more value, way more weight than, oh, I'm sorry, you know?
Yeah.
And this is probably my hot take, and I've said this before, is that we have received, we've got our restitution, we have our temple blessings, we have the priest, power of the priesthood, we have the authority, rather, and what are we actually doing with it?
Exactly.
Do we even magnify it to its full capacity? Do we actually even attend the temple when we can? Do we actually bless our children, bless our wives, bless our families? Probably not. Majority of us don't to its full capacity. I mean, President Nelson's called all of us to repentance multiple times. And so we have this gift. We received these temple blessings, this restitution. What are we doing with it? Mm-hmm. And so most of us, black, white, yellow, green, yellow, purple, I don't know who you are. It doesn't. At the end, are you using the gift that you have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not doing it.
We all understand there's like that certain group of people that the antis or the ex-Mormons, the people that are outside the faith that have a problem with. And those are like real members. But the reality is you're going to have those people in every organization, especially a global religion, like dealing with racist people. I have a bold take where I do think that if you're racist, you shouldn't be allowed in the temple. That's how I feel. I feel like I would rather sit and worship in the celestial room with someone who smokes weed than somebody who is blatantly racist and is outwardly about that online. I do think that where we hold the standard of who a good person is, I feel like we do have members in the church that make justifications for racism and racist remarks online. Yeah. Yeah. But someone that smokes weed, they deserve jail time. It's just like, come on, dude. Like, what are we talking about here? There are certain things, like certain nuances that we have to deal with, but it sucks because it's that silent, it's the loud minority that just gets it's like, that's how it is. That's how the church is. And it's just like, oh my goodness, dude.
That's
like,
the way it is. Like, yeah.
That's what sucks. But either way, I do think that what you said is totally key. Like at the end of the day, it is on us. And the best way we can change the hearts and minds of members is to magnify our callings, magnify our homes. Because then when people say, oh, shoot, like, look at Will, like, taking care of his family. Like, I wonder, like, why is he like that? Oh, the testimony in his faith. Oh, what does that mean? And then they can find out for themselves as opposed to us sitting over here arguing with the person that we'll never meet in our lives. So,
it gets me so mad. Yeah. Right. Honestly, my conversion is more than skin deep. Be honest, you know, you can look at, think about those people who joined the church
back in the 60s, the 50s, regardless of outwardly racism, knowing that they could not be a part of anything and people saying all these things about them, but they still stayed there.
Spiritual monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. For real. But they were converted, not about cultural side, not because they were in the same room with someone or they got to do something. It's because they had something that happened to them inside, you know? And I think that's what matters. That's what Trump's, no pun intended, over of what is important, what's important, you know? And I think people kind of forget that. You need to be converted internally before you can try to have problems with people externally.
I love that. The conversion is deep in the skin. Deep in the skin. Deep. Yeah. You better get your editor. You got to put a little close up. Now we got to put a close up. No, but it's so true. I think the bishop was trying to scold some of the members for staying up late and drinking kava. And he was saying, like, you were part of God's culture before you're part of man's culture. Mm. And I think, like, us learning how to magnify ourselves in the gospel helps us to become better in the different facets of life we partake in, and also the things that are put upon us, like our ethnicity and whatnot. So
yeah, most definitely. You know, I want to be empathetic towards people that do need apologies. Do I personally feel like the church, general church leadership, needs to come out and apologize? I don't. I'm on the same stand with you guys. Some people, though, are different. They're not just as strong in faith as some member. We're all, like, in different areas. So some people just need to talk about it. Right. Yeah. And so I do want to be empathetic towards those people. And so there are people that say, well, the church needs to address it. They need to talk more openly about it. Well, that's what these platforms are for. That's what we could do. Get together after church with some church members that have these same feelings and issues and talk about it. But don't expect the general leadership of the church to just focus and talk about it when their primary goal is to bring others unto Christ by helping them receive the covenants. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't spend conference after conference talking about race when we need to get people to Christ, you know, like, and we need to lead them to Christ by encouraging them to do these things, to keep the commandments. Mm-hmm. But so I just wanted to lay that out there because I do want to be empathetic towards those people that just need to get a good talk through it. And I do want to say this, racism is not going to go anywhere until people change their hearts. This is an inward disease. Yes. You know, it's a disease of the heart. And the only way racism is going to end is if, what happened?
You said N-word, right?
Yeah.
But it sounded like
N-word. Oh.
I go, like, my mind, I had to, like.
Did anybody else hear that?
I did, low-key. But I was like, I know what he meant. Context clues.
I got the context clues. It took me a minute.
Anyway.
N-word. Yeah.
I saw N-word. The realization hit on him, and I was like, oh, shoot.
Everybody at home about to be like, did he say N-word? Or?
I know, N-word.
Inwardly?
N-word. Gotcha.
No, it's just not, it's not going to heal itself until the individual makes the steps to see people the way God sees people, mm-hmm. you know? And all right, let's say you're not religious or you're not in faith, but you, like, just see people the way you would want to be seen.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way, or and treat people that way. That's the only way racism is ever going to go away. Like, an apology ain't going to do it. We made some great points on why, because the work and the reparation behind the actions holds way more weight than just the words.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's my two piece on it.
I think, I love that. And I think, like, you guys know, I serve my mission in Africa, and where I was the lightest person around. Right. And so I think that racism or tribalism, hate, is actually a condition everybody faces, not just one race or the other. Cause I'm like, when I was in Africa, there were 37 tribes in Kenya and they hated each other. And I'm like, I'm here sitting here like, you guys all look alike, like maybe like subtle little differences, your eyes are just a little bit different, you have a different last name, and you hate each other, but you, like, from an American's perspective to an African perspective, completely different. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, along what you're saying, maybe racism, or like, I would expand it to just hating somebody that you don't know, or hating someone that you, who isn't familiar to you, is something that is a human condition and we need to root out in ourselves.
Right. Natural man condition.
Natural
yeah.
man.
Yeah. Because yeah. even, I always imagine this, like, imagine a world where, like, tomorrow we could snap our fingers and racism in America is, like, cured, right? Mm-hmm. What's the next thing? There's going to be a next thing.
Actually,
like, in order to have a hierarchy, there has to be something. And I talk about this, I did, like, a deep study of, like, race and the history of slavery when I was in college. And it just, my professor put it clearly, like, the reason why racism worked in America was because it was one of the first times in the history where the majority, the majority was ruling. Typically in these societies, in these countries where they have revolts, it's where the minority, or like the people, like, let's say that the people that were being discriminated against, they end up being the majority.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was successful in America is because you come down to America, they have a super, super rich guy tell a poor white guy, hey, like, no, you have power because these people are below you. And then now, like, this poor white guy still feels his power, but he's still pushing that person up. And it's like, it's become like, people don't understand there's so many class issues that we have that are similar to different countries.
And the
reason why we haven't been able to progress past that is because we've been fighting against each other. It does suck, though, to think that I've had people on my page, and you guys probably have people on your pages, and people that you guys have seen throughout your life where they have realized their racism because they've met you and liked you as a person and realized, wow, like, maybe me not liking this person because of their skin color isn't good. And it sounds crazy to say, but I had a lady message me yesterday that said, like, basically I made her see her racism and that she's going to try harder to be kind to black people. And I sat there thinking to myself, like, I was pissed. I mean, sorry, I was extremely, I was mad, man. I was like, what in the world? Like, why are you messaging me this? And I realized, oh my gosh, like, why does it take, like, I guarantee you there are people in the world that probably saw Michael Jordan and was like, all of a sudden start to become fond of black people. And it's like, why do we have to, like, be, not, I'm not saying the best of human beings, but why do we have to be some elevated look for you guys to see past the color? And it does suck, but that is the reality. And so, like, when you said something about, like, are we magnifying our callings, and I'm like, hey, am I going to the temple enough? Like, yeah, I was a temple worker, but am I going to the temple enough to where I can put myself in situations where members can see me in these spaces? Because it is important for representation, not just for us in these callings, but it is important for us to put ourselves in spaces where they can see us online, where they can see us in our callings, where they can see us as fathers, because it is empowering. I know for me, about to become a father, there are some things that you guys know that I can't learn from other groups. And it also, same thing goes for them. Like, there are some things that they can learn from you guys that they can't learn from other groups. And it does suck that we have to be put on this little, like, pedestal where it's like, if we screw up, we might have messed up their perception of black people. But it is a burden that I think that if we live our covenants, that is easier to bear.
Yeah,
most definitely.
This honestly, this podcast, this platform we have, that was kind of a little bit of the genesis of why we started it, is that we can change perceptions of black members and black men, that we are fathers. We do keep our covenants. We love our wives. We love taking care of our children. Just all these things that people may think that don't exist, or what the news tells them or what media says about us, isn't always true. I mean, there's some stereotypes out there. People live up to it. Yeah. But majority of us, we're not like what you see on TV, you know? And so we want to change that and change that perception.
Most I love definitely. That.
Shout out to the foyer.
Hey. Shout out. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, when it boils down to it, we leading the sheep to the waters, right? To the living waters, which is Christ. And he's going to be the one that, you know, can clear up all the mud that's in our hearts. And with that being said, let's go to the man, Joseph Smith.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Like, the man. Like, the Joseph man. Smith.
You know, Jehovah. Yeah.
I haven't met Joseph Smith, but he is one individual that I cannot wait to meet. Like, when I read his stories, when I read his experiences, visions he's had, the knowledge he had, of all the prophets, modern as well as ancient, he's on my top. He's like my top that I can't wait to meet, for the reason of how I'm living in a time where I can hear and learn about him and just see how his name is getting drugged through the mud. But I can see how, through his history and through personal revelation and insights that I've had, how faithful he was. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about why the church members, especially people that leave church, have such a hard time with Joseph Smith.
I think it's we talked about this point about seeing people through a different lens, or seeing them through Jesus, or seeing them as God would see them. That's something I've struggled with. I'm still kind of struggling with it right now, you know, and when people make mistakes, it's hard for me to let that go and to move on and realize, oh, they're human just like I am. And I think when we see Joseph Smith, especially non-members, we think of all the negative things, you know, oh, he did this. Oh, he did this. He was a liar. You know, he had, you know, multiple wives or whatever the case may be, instead of looking at his good as well, the good that he has done, you know, and his sacrifice, you know. What if he, of course, Heavenly Father would have had someone else, but what if he was like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to take upon this responsibility. But I think we tend to judge before we even understand the full picture. And I think as you pray and as you diligently figure out the plan, you realize like, oh man, Joseph Smith was on the right track. He was doing what he should have been doing, you know. Yeah. So
you got me thinking a little bit. Do you feel it's people's perception of what a prophet should be?
Oh, for sure.
Because he is a modern prophet. I mean, it's been within the 200 years, but that's modern for us in terms of prophets of God. And when we read the scriptures in the Bibles, prophets are seen as these highly righteous, sometimes mystical beings that they just live these perfect lives. And we don't have insight into what their day to day was like. Yeah. We have with Joseph Smith, we can kind of see kind of his history and some of the things that he did outside of the role of a prophet.
Right.
Yeah. He's a magnifying glass on him. Like, I think what Joseph Smith was able to accomplish, I think people, like we talk about it, people just don't have understanding. Do you know, like at that time, like we talk about his education, like a fifth grade education or whatever. Not even just the amount of faith, but the amount of work that he was willing to put in. He had to, like, even managing finances at that time. Like, who's going to teach him that? Like, how did he know how to navigate that? Being able to implement things that were in the Bible at that time. Like, do we not, like, we can't cut him some slack. If you brought the same magnifying glass to every prophet in the Bible, how would you guys feel about them? And I think it's just an improper pedestal that people put these prophets on. We admire the prophets for their faith in God. Mm-hmm. That's what we admire them for. The same way we can compartmentalize and you can say, I admire Taylor Swift for her music making ability. That doesn't mean that she's going to be the captain of, like, who I take dating advice from, right? Like, same thing goes with Michael Jordan or like any athlete that we look to. We admire them for their athletic feats. That doesn't mean that we love them for this, and this that they're not adept in, right? With the prophets, I admire them for their faith in God, and I want to emulate that. Now, Joseph Smith had to wear many hats in the beginning, and for people to criticize him, when I promise you, like, Joseph Smith had a more elevated mind than probably 99% of people at that time. Mm-hmm. The fact that they hated him even more because he rocked with black people. Let's make that clear. Mm-hmm. Like, he gave black people he allowed black people to have the priesthood at the time. And like, imagine that, like, to be at that time and to say, like, black people were, dude, we were at that time, we were lynched for looking at a white woman. Like, we were enslaved at the time. And for Joseph Smith to be like, no, actually, you have the light of Christ in you. And not only that, you can have the power of God.
Not to mention Native Americans.
Like that, yeah. That alone would get you killed. Mm-hmm. At alone, even saying that Joseph Smith would get you killed. And the fact that people think that that hit, like, how can you think at that level without having some sort of connection with God? Because there's no way he just woke up one day and was just like, you know what? I believe this about this group that has been ingrained in our minds to be beneath. And so there's so many little things that I think that I truly, truly respect Joseph Smith for, and for him to die for something he believed in and believe it to the very end, to put, like, and I know that even the stuff with polygamy, like, makes me reaffirm that he had to been a prophet of God, because that was a struggle for him. He didn't want to implement that at all.
People don't understand that.
They don't understand
it that. Was years. He received that inspiration in like 1832 that the patriarchal order of marriage would need to be implemented, which is part of the restoration, bring all the truths back, which we call polygamy. And in 1832, it was supposed to go into a force, but he waited like years because he struggled with it. Mm-hmm. For it wasn't until like in early 1840s where they actually started like practicing that.
And that's like, but how can we put these prophets under these lenses, which we can't understand? Because I think Moses is amazing. I love it. The fact that he was able to accomplish what he was able to accomplish, but he was by no means, he was not Jesus Christ. You know, like he still blew up in his anger. Mm-hmm. The 12 apostles still had their moments. Like, everybody had their moments. I will say Moses' moments is not like my moments. You know what I'm saying? Like, Moses still like I would love to have his moments. You know, like he for sure, I'm not in the same realm as any of those guys. But
yeah,
with that being said, the criticism that Joseph Smith get, if we filmed, like you guys said, the day-to-day of every other prophet, I just don't think people would have faith at all. And I think that's where the issue is. It's like, we don't have faith, you know, in these men. Like, we sustain these men, but our faith is in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's like, you know, like, if Jesus Christ is the head coach and he ordains you to be the QB, like, I may not like the route that you call me to run. I may not like the audibles that you made, but it's like, we trust in him. And so because we trust in him, you know, we are going to sustain and support where we can.
Right.
But
I think it's really hard for people to realize that you need to separate the human side from prophets, because if you actually did read the scriptures, you would see that all of them had flaws.
Mm-hmm.
All of them had mistakes that they made. I mean, all of them had some type of issue. I mean, if you think about Peter, I mean, I've said this before as well. Peter, the dude cut off someone's ear. The dude was told, hey, why you lack faith? He denied Christ after walking with him daily, three times, not once, but three times. And yet we don't even bat an eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we had that same compassion as Jesus Christ did for him, why can't we have that for the rest of the prophets?
Yeah.
Understanding that they have weaknesses. And I'm pretty sure none of those prophets, the prophets today, have went to that extreme of doing things. And so I think if we take a step back and realize that, hey, these men are humans, they have weaknesses, but they're a rough stone rolling. You know, they're continually going each and every day, taking out those smooth spots, and the Lord is helping them and giving them strength.
To take that a little bit further, I think a lot of people don't, like, they say, oh yeah, they're human too, but like, they don't take the time to walk in their shoes. If you were put in Joseph Smith's position,
you would fold.
I would be.
I'll go back farming.
Yeah. I mean, like the stuff he had to do with the plates, even at the beginning of starting the church, the
being tarred and feathered.
Being tarred and feathered. I mean, like, even when they had to flee and go to Nauvoo and they had to drain swamps. They had to live in horrible conditions. People were like, they had to flee Illinois or which one had
everywhere?
Missouri had the kill order on. Like, could you imagine living at that time and being in his shoes? And like, of course you're going to make mistakes, you know, like everything is fighting against you. And so I just think it's crazy that people will like hold on to the flaws that he had so strongly, but won't consider the position that he was in.
Yeah.
And like, we need to be able to apply the atonement to them, you know, forgive them of their mistakes, but look at what they brought to us, the light, the knowledge, like the relationship that I have with Christ is because Joseph Smith went through all that crap. mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, my life wouldn't be the same if he didn't do that.
Yeah. You shall know them by their fruits. It's like no one, how are we going to have the fruits that we have right now if the root wasn't pure, you know? Mm-hmm. And we all have an understanding that, like we said, they're human, that people aren't perfect. And it does not make sense to me how we can't provide that same grace, to Joseph Smith. It's like, do we not know? Like, I'm not saying that I always said, I can't say that I know for everybody else the Book of Mormon is true. I can't tell you that. I know for me, like I know in my heart that it has to be true. The reason being is just all the fruits that it has brought in our lives. Like in my life specifically, I've been able to see God's hand in my life because of this book. So if this book is true, then what he did it for a reason and had to have been something that I feel is led by God. But man, give me chills thinking about all that kind of stuff that he kind of goes through. Man, I had one rough day and I'm ready to say, hey, I don't know if this is it. I don't know if we can do this.
Yeah. I mean, very similar to Christ being a progressive thinker in his time, because a lot of people don't know is the reason they were driven out of Missouri was because of his progressive stance of slavery, mm-hmm. you know, and accepting black people, where Missouri was a slave state.
I know that.
Yeah. Bro. And, you know, these are things where people just think, oh, these are things because they were Mormons, right? And because of their faith. But no, there was a lot of progressive actions that he had and wanted to implement that caused and ruffled some feathers, you know, during that time. Mm-hmm. And I know we just about up on time. I do want to say one thing is, all the things we've discussed, you know, that people have issues with, the garments, Joseph Smith and race. These are all things when you look at them that are there. They can be areas of issues. Right. But they're also stumbling blocks. I love that Mo brought that up. They're stumbling blocks for a lot of people. And so our goal and our hope for this podcast is that we can help people overcome and flatten out those stumbling blocks so that way they can have a smoother path to walk towards the Savior. And so if we need to have these discussions, let's have these discussions and find out how we can navigate through it and help us get closer to Christ, because he's obviously and hopefully the end goal for everybody. So just want to thank you guys for everything, all the words that you brought, the inspiration. Batch, I want you to end us off, man. Like, what are any last words you'd want the audience to know? Any testimony you'd like to share? Just give us what your last feelings are.
Just to start off the new year, I know that my life, the biggest jump in my life didn't come from a job change or dating life or graduating college. Like those were never big jumps in my life. The biggest jump came from when I made that conscious decision I was going to focus on my relationship with God. And because of that, it became the past 2 years have been the most humbling years of my life, and realizing that I may not be enough in these certain areas, but that I can experience joy regardless of the circumstance. And because of that, it gives you what I think is godly confidence. And with that, you're able to be more fully yourself. And I think that's what this gospel provides. So if you're struggling with your faith or struggling to find New Year's goals, I would say, don't worry about any outside noise. Your relationship with God is between you and him. And then he will provide you the platform to do whatever you need to do in the capacity that you can. And I know for myself that this church is true. And I know for sure that these brothers right here they're men of God. And not only that, they're people that if you listen and follow along with their podcast, I know for sure you can't help but better your life. I do have a love for these gentlemen, and I do have a love for my Savior. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, man. Thanks, that. And we want to thank you guys. Thank our audience for joining us on this episode of Brothers in the Foyer. Please remember to like and subscribe to these videos. We want to continue to bring the light and shed it abroad for everyone. Also, share these videos, because there are a lot of people out there that need to hear these things and have been waiting to hear these discussions addressed in an open manner as this. So,
Bachelor, where can they find you?
Oh yeah.
My name is spelled like Batch of Cookies, L-O-R. So it's spelled like Bachelor, but it's pronounced Bachelor, and it's Bachelor IV on Instagram, TikTok, and then on YouTube. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Thank you. That's cool. Thanks for adding that in, Mo. Definitely got to know how to find our brother here. Yeah, and thank you all again. Yes, we will have the link in the bio for sure. Thanks again, and we will see you guys next time when we join together on Brothers in the Foyer.
Okay, please.